Today on The Grave Talks, exorcism. Nightmares, witchcraft, exorcism, and curses. Not exactly words anyone thinks of when describing a relationship. However, for Lee Moore, this is exactly what he dealt with when a woman he was dating wanted to end the relationship. Rather than a healthy breakup, Lee became the victim of a curse to drive him away. Dismissing this as an elaborate way to end the relationship, he thought nothing of it. Lee moved on and fell in love with a new wife. He began a new life, only to find that this curse was all too real and never left him. Subsequently, Lee experienced unexplained trauma and torture that nearly ended his life. With the help of spiritual warrior and exorcist couple Kenneth and Farah Deal, Lee was able to banish the curse and these demons from his life. This is his story. Kenneth and Farah Deal join us today to discuss exorcism. Kenneth, how did it all begin for you?
So it goes back to when we're both children. Even though we didn't live in the same neighborhood or anything, we're both victims of the haunt, so to speak. It's kind of a more generic term to say that. But it's night terrors. It's day terrors. It's and you don't want to know why it's there. What did she do to draw that stuff in? Nothing. But you're left to fend it for yourself. We're both Catholic families and cradle Catholics. And it's frightening when you're a child because the parents tell you, oh, it's just a nightmare. It's just imagination. No, it's a nightmare. That's where you're supposed to be asleep. But then again, you're awake and you can recite your address and you move around your bed and you stand. You watch the phenomenon go on. And it's real and it's in your face. And I think Farah might have had a grandmother that might have actually lent her a little clue. But when you have parents and they just give you a St. Benedict medal. And I wore a St. Benedict medal as long as I can remember. Was that their way of doing it just in case and just turning a blind eye on the other side? Because some people say if you ignore it, everything is okay. You know, like, yeah, just ignore it. Don't give it any credit. Don't give it any recognition. That's not what it means by that when people say that. So, and that could have been, a great number of things, too. And, such as I'd wake up and then I open my eyes up and I saw this little pixie light coming out of my closet, swirling in counterclockwise direction. And as it got closer, I could see it was a man's face, an older man's face, engulfed in flames. It was a bit black and white, it's very kind of faded looking and semi-transparent. And I just kind of held still. One of your protocols when you're a kid, you either cover your head or you hold still like it's not going to see you. But it still came from my face. So I held still like maybe he's not going to see me because my head's covered up with my face sticking out so I could see what's going on. And it just kind of went poof right in my front of my face like some sort of bad cartoon rendering. When a coyote drops to the ground off the cliff and you see in the distance this kind of smoke, flying out everywhere where the coyote hit the ground. And some other things was I woke up one night and I looked up and I was like, what's that in my ceiling? I saw something flying around in a circle like a moth around my light, which wasn't on in the center of the room. And then I realized that's a piece of cardboard. It's like a cardboard lid. So I got up and I looked up at it and it dove at me like some sort of, aggressive bird protecting its nest and took a couple dives. And then at the last thing, which it went on not very long, it went behind my chest of drawers. It just kind of flew back there, slid right behind there. So I went to the bathroom. Sometimes you're in and you're in kind of a state. You're like, what just happened? And then it takes a while to soak in. Instead of running off, like a ghost. No, you don't necessarily do that. Sometimes you stand there and you're mystified. Sometimes when you're younger, you don't know what was that or what is this. Am I seeing this correctly? Mom, right? It's a strange dream. I'll get the popcorn out and I'll watch it. So it's a little bit of different emotion sometimes, depending on the experience itself. I mean, obviously, if it's someone that looks like they're going to kill you, you're going to scream like I did when I was 15. But I moved the chest of drawers out after I got the nerve to come back, turning all the lights on. And there back there was a piece of cardboard, some ripped piece that looked like a part of a box lid, where they flip over and you pack it. And it was the same piece of cardboard, same size and everything else. So things like that. It's like, what were they there for? No one in our house practiced witchcraft. That's usually what we find nowadays. You know, I would consider us a good Catholic family, but it's surprising some of the things that can draw these things in. So that brings us to the picture. We have priests, nuns, monks in our family. We had the Forrest brothers, mom's cousins. That was Bishop Forrest. That was Monsignor Charles Forrest. That was the diocese priest, Father Bill. And they were brothers. And so we had clergy all over to ask questions. And, you know, and we go to my aunts on Sunday, who were very devout, used to go to Mass every day, lived by the cathedral in St. Louis. And, you know, on my mom's side. So that was just kind of always there. So we always heard this stuff. My dad got into spiritual warfare and the deliverance ministry at some point in the 60s. And then quit when I was in third grade because, we'll just say, it rubbed him the wrong way. Long story short on that one. And those things brought us in. They were kind of born and bred. And I think in a way Farrah was too, that brought us up to this. And we met together. I did paranormal teams. I read from the parapsychology standpoint in depth. I even made my own devices because I'm an electronics technician. But I realized that I'm in the wrong place. And they're not ghosts most of the time. In one way or another, they're smaller levels of demonic activity that people don't pertain to demons. But moving ahead without dragging this out and all that kind of stuff, when we met my wife, we finally had all these things in common. And we, I would be considering a demonologist out there because of what she experienced. And she's inquisitive and she's always asking the questions. She researches, she reads, she, you know, she's got an intuitive side where she prays and then she gets an answer like, why is this way or that way? So we end up coming on the same page almost on this entirely. And that thus begins our ministry with the diocese and everything else at some point or another. It's like we all got bred and trained, School of Hard Knocks, and then we got together as a couple at some point.
Farrah, can you give us some of your background and what led up to when you guys met?
Well, as similar and as strange as it may be, the sign above my head ever since I can remember, I don't know if it was 3 months or 3 years, has always said, bring your sad, bring your broken, bring your psychos, I can deal. And that sums it up in three words that ever since I can remember, the dark side has crawled out of any closet wherever I've stayed to try and arrest my development. And as Ken said, the only way I really learned how to deal with it was my grandmother, who also had strange encounters. My mother and father totally said, no, it doesn't exist. Deal with it. Deal with it. And of course, I yelled and screamed and woke them up on a regular basis till they finally got me the coolest thing. It was this brilliant, brilliant little plastic Bambi light that lit up. So I would like clutch that thing at night under the covers, no less, trying to keep the darkness at bay. And fortunately, you know, no major encounters of bruises or injuries or anything else. Meanwhile, children at school and teenagers, people had a instant, I don't know if it was an identification of the darkness in my eyes. I don't know what it was, but could tell me just about any horror story that they'd encountered. And I try and help them. I try and help them get away from things, help them use any kind of crucifixes, tools, prayers, anything that they could do to stay away from these things. And this was a regular occurrence, especially up into high school when girls were having 3, 6, 7 abortions and being haunted and disturbed by dreams and nightmares, into work that I was volunteering for suicide hotlines and eventually working with teams. The worst encounter in my high school years was being with a, which I did not know, a group of kids that were in just into camping and were conjuring demons that a person would normally think you were crazy. Would absolutely think that you were crazy. When a person doesn't really believe another person can conjure a demon and goes and hides in a tent, and they start hearing strange noises and wind and leaves and growls, you learn to find God real quick. And sadly, that happened to a couple of the boys that were there that were friends with this one misunderstood youth that eventually ended up committing suicide 3 years later. Sad to say, yes. So my life has been peppered with incidents like this, preparing me for some of the most ugly, most horrendous things that other people have experienced, so that I believe I can help bring them back to a place of healing and complete understanding that we're not here to understand what happened to us. We're here to help other people with our experiences. And it's interesting that Ken said we had so much in common. One of the first things, you know, we've been doing this about a decade together. He sent me his book. Hilarious. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here, read my book. Check this out. You know, get to know me. And I looked at the book and I skimmed through. I'm like, I could have written this book. I know all this stuff. And so I told him, I says, because he kept asking, "Did you read my book? Did you read my book?" He said, "I don't need to. I could have written it." I looked at it, and it's like, you know, I think we got to add some things for your book. I mean, that was my first thing. It's like, I got so much I can add here because of my exposure multiculturally through growing up as a Navy brat to many different cultures, curandera, voodoo, all sorts of different things that, you know, Ken was like, "Whoa, really? Seriously?" Yeah. So what brings us together, our common ground, is the common history of being tormented and haunted as children. And then coming to the realization that ghost hunting wasn't leading anywhere, tagging along with investigators, this wasn't helping people heal, and the desire to do more so that people actually can get some relief, so that people can use tools of their faith to relieve themselves from the pressures of the dark.
So you guys did not meet on demonologistmatch.com, where they
close, but you know, I'm pretty close to opening up myself, because you know, you have weird and you have weirder, and you know, if you can sort out the two, you know, the weirder, it takes a special kind of weirdo to be able to talk. We can't talk like this with people we know. It's like you know, it's like for years, you know, we go pick up our kids and the parents run the other way, you know, or we go to recitals and the parents kind of smile and they run to the opposite side of the bench, you know. It's like, We don't carry cooties, okay?
I completely can relate to you, and I'm probably one of the few who can, because my wife co-hosts my other program with me, Real Ghost Stories Online, and it's always a great great thing when you're out at a school event or something. What do you guys do? It's like...
We do. Well, let's see. We don't believe that ghosts are bothering you, but we see lots of demons around you. Shall I exercise you now or later?
Exactly.
That's a joke, but you know, you gotta laugh.
You do. I mean, it's like, I just say broadcasting. I do some podcasts. What's your podcast about? Ghosts? Like, and in this part of the country, because I should tell the audience, we're actually not too far from each other. They're in Springfield. I'm in Branson, which is all of about 25 miles away. It's not a topic that is easily embraced by a lot.
Not even easily understand.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not sure what your branch of faith is, but even across the borders, even with, you know, non-denominational people, even with people that have only been exposed to a little bit of faith, people don't want to think that there's some kind of dark boogity out there that could disturb their dreams. They want a pill.
Yeah.
They want, you know, they want something like, you know, let's cut the finger off, the finger's disease. Mm-hmm. So the spiritual realm is very, very difficult for people to swallow and accept, truthfully.
It is, and especially in small talk when you're just getting to know someone. It's one of those where it's like, I'm just going to say broadcasting for a while, and if you actually become a friend, then I'll let you in on the secret when you come down to my office and see all of our graphics on the wall for the show.
That's got to be hilarious. Well, and that's us, too. We usually just tell people that, you know, we have a radio show and we do books, and we usually say we do spiritual warfare. Well, what's that? Well, what are you going to battle for?
Sometimes it's easier to say Office of Exorcism and Deliverance. Don't like
Why don't we say that too, Ken? So
yeah, have you ever had that thing? I don't know. You know, it's like when you're dating and you know there's this moment sometimes when you're having lunch where you totally lose them, or vice versa, and they start looking at their watch, trying to be casual about it. Mm-hmm. You touched on something that turned them off. Well, imagine if you're doing this and dating or something like that. What do you really do? Well, the truth is, and then you look, and she's gorgeous. and all that stuff. And it's like, oh boy, maybe I should have kept that a secret.
Yeah.
But now there, it's all we talked about. Well, not all, you know, we had a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
We talked for 72 hours the first time we met,
yeah.
Which is another story in itself.
I mean, literally, we were on the phone from 7 to 11 hours a day because I was on vacation drinking wine at my brother's house.
Yeah, and I had a wireless phone.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, okay, 20 years ago, you couldn't do this. You'd have a $5,000 bill.
Sure.
You've got endless talk. It's like, so you just hang out and you do your work, mm-hmm. you do your exercise, and you just talk to people because I was, mm-hmm. you know, bored and I hadn't really met anybody that actually got what I was doing and what I'd been through. So it was kind of a nice, refreshing change to hear a man mm-hmm. that had dealt with demonics. He had dealt with, you know, going through teams that, you know, didn't quite understand what he was doing and mm-hmm. his methodology. And he drew from a variety of sources to put together what he was doing and how he was doing it. And me, I'm, you know, I'm a fly girl. I'm just on the fly. I'm doing what I need to do to get people where they need to go. And mm-hmm. I wasn't even that organized.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely understand. It is a difficult to relate to others when we're in this field of this topic. On this episode, obviously, there's a lot of cases I'd love to dive into with you guys, and I hope we can over the future. But today on this episode, I want to talk about the Lee Moore case and that very fascinating one. I know it was featured on, I believe, A Haunting. I'm not sure if it was featured anywhere else, but that to me was one that stood out to me. And I was wanting to get more of an in-depth perspective on what went on there. From the beginning, back when, from what I understand, there was a conflict with a previous girlfriend when essentially something was put onto him. And then through his next relationship, and then when you guys got involved. Can you guys jump in there and start sharing with us some background on that case and how that all began?
If I start on that, Farrah, you might have to jump in and fill the details. Some of this stuff gets sketchy when it's his account.
I'm before good at poking we enter. You.
Yeah, so we'll be like a tag team.
Well, just
team.
To let you know how we do things, you know, to set the tone for your listeners as well as yourself so that you can follow the timeline. When we get a call, we're usually handed off cases by reliable investigators, by the church, by pastors, by other people that know that we have the tools to get to the heart of the problem. And we recognize demonic footprints almost instantly because we work in the Office of Spiritual Warfare and Exorcism. And that's how this one started. This whole case was a handoff because somebody thought this is appearing dark. The elements are starting to be dark and we're not sure we can deal with this. So Ken and I, when we handle an investigation, we usually do not need somebody's life story. We don't need the history of your house. We don't need to know, you know, the last four generations, whether they were Freemasons, whether they were Satanists. We need to know what has happened to you in the last 72 hours and how have you dealt with it? Because the footprints will be there.
Yeah.
The footprints will be there. So we're almost like, you know, somebody walking very quietly through the woods, listening for the intruder. And that's how we deal with these things. So the case was peeling back the layers of an onion to find out the source, because we cannot attack the problem until we find the source. And this is how this case got so horrendously bad, was because the person that handed us the case didn't give us all the details.
Okay.
So Ben, you can take it from there.
Yeah, and yeah, the back is eventually what we go to, but we can get so much out of it. We approach it like a police style interview, and I'm not saying this is detective, not police, because every, you know, there's a lot of people out there. I'm an ex-cop, so I'm qualified to be a demonologist. But if all that's not true, if you were an ex-detective, you would have that methodical thinking. And being an ex-cop just means you know how to file the paperwork. Mm-hmm. Ask the questions, you know, and just give them to the detective. You get the initial on-the-scene investigation stuff, which is not really an investigation. Oh, someone broke into the house at 3 a.m., and they got this little notebook. That's why I don't have a big one. They don't take pictures unless someone was murdered. So that's important to mention. So it's like the methodical thing of sometimes looking for what shouldn't be there first instead of the other way around, like Sherlock Holmes' method of deduction. He had a girlfriend, and apparently she didn't. He's a nice guy. She didn't know how to get rid of him. Isn't that terrible? Her girlfriend was a witch, and she says, I know how to get rid of him. And they did a spell on him to break it up. And so it goes back to that, because some things reveal themselves later, as you'll discover. And the episode was originally called the Love Curse, or Love Curse. I think it was just called Love Curse, for those who wanted to look it up, or, you know,
buy it. I think it's still available on YouTube. Yes, it's called Love Curse.
Yeah, whatever season, I can't even remember that part of it or not.
Well, Love Curse is pretty unusual, but it's very common too. So.
And this is where it gets sketchy, because this part where he goes up and I realized he had this horrific dream. I don't remember the timeline for his story as well, unless I would watch the show again, which we haven't since it came out on DVD when they sent
us. We don't
watch
our shows anyway.
Yeah. So what can you fill on that part there? Because
I think the most important thing to think about, and as far as a timeline goes, is that for whatever reason, even though, you know, he knew that he was unwanted and that he found out that his girlfriend wanted to dump him, and his girlfriend's friend, a witch, had lit candles and set about casting spells so that, you know, he would dump her. That didn't really occur to him as to be a problem so much as other things that were currently going on. And that's how sometimes when we enter into a case, people are only seeing the periphery of 3 feet outside of them, when actually it's about 12 feet away. And that's how we found out about this at a later time, was he had already had a curse placed on him. And as anyone working in spiritual warfare or demonology understands, that curse doesn't have to happen today. It doesn't have to happen next month. It could happen 5 months. It could happen 50 years from now. That's the interesting thing about demons. They don't have a timeline like we do. So when we tend to think that these supernatural beings do have a timeline, that's where we're limited and that's where we get stuck. So this thing that had basically manifested itself had its roots in this original curse and was not actually discovered until he was on death's door.
Yeah,
so,
more depth.
So at that point, was he aware, and I want to find out how he got to death's door, but did it take getting to that point to realize a curse had been placed on him, or did he find out that the ex-girlfriend did this in the course of the breakup?
It was actually in the course of the breakup, and he blew it off because, one, he's a good Christian man. Two, he doesn't believe in curses. And like most people that don't believe in voodoo, he kind of blew it off. He didn't think anything of it.
Okay.
And we didn't find out about this until, was it from his mother in the emergency room? Because it was not from the initial investigative group.
He told us about the dream and that sort of thing, and I think things got revealed later on, but... Yeah, one of the things about this, like, okay, they sent a hitman, is the girl. They do the ritual together. They sent a hitman to do a job. That's to get him away from her, to break him up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they do it by making him sick, really sick. Sometimes cancer shows up. That definitely takes you out of life or something. In this case, the job was done, but the demon was not ordered away. The curse wasn't broken. So he's hanging on there waiting for the perfect opportunity when he can maybe do more, even though the original... goal has already been accomplished. They just don't leave and come back like a hitman. Even a hitman's nicer than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that they use one of his articles of clothing, and then he reveals it's a dream. It was like that he was, and there was some monstrous looking being in there, a demonic being, and that he was, you know, dealing with it. And one point or another, he slammed it outside the front of his house, and it stabbed him with a long sword through the door, through his gut. We call that like the point of entry. It's usually in, you know, an organ or something like that. And whenever these deliverances occur on a person where it's oppression and possession, they might have a sign of departure a lot and double over in pain, where they remember getting that pain. It's 3 a.m. in the morning waking up. It's like they entered, and they don't enter like a giant body would. It could be a small, like, let's say a rodent burrowed its way in, you know, after a knife had, made an incision. So with that dream, I can't remember the details of the dream other than that I considered that was a point of entry. We focused on that, not really so much why, you know, like about this. But we noticed when we got called in by another investigator, we'll just say, who ended up being... that woman with the crystal wand, that he was having oppression. and the house was infested. So details on that, Farrah, is when it starts to get smoking. And that was right before we came there. It was already in progress. Some of them was just like the girl was pregnant. That's his wife. And then she was pregnant. She got shoved in the backyard. So when you got two people telling you the same story that are lining up and they talk in their
sleep. And neither one of them is taking any medication. Neither one of them have ever been admitted for psychiatric difficulties. Neither one of them have ever had hallucinations. They're both of sound mind, of sound reason. They both hold wonderful jobs. They're both, you know, they're a young couple in love. You know, they just got their house and they're living their life and they're telling you these things are going on. And for whatever reason, the investigator can't figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Come to find out that, you know, when we get there, the so-called investigator had supposedly told him there was demons in the house and had bound a demon into the mirror in the back room. And there was another point of, shall we say, capture in a side building that this person said, well, you know, you've got another demon. I'm just going to take my magic wand and put it in there too. Well, we had to explain to the kids that if you are Christian, you cannot allow any kind of necromancy or magic on your property. And we had to try and dismiss, you know, this person and these activities and help them clear their house up. The activity stopped for a little while and then this person stops by again and says, well, I had a feeling when I drove by, I saw more things in your yard, so I stopped by to help you again. Boom, stuff starts happening. And this is when we have to come in and do a second round of cleanup and tell them that you can't open the door to these people. Mm-hmm. If somebody's insisting on crossing your threshold, it's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Because they keep, this is what we tell people, all right? When you go to the doctor and you have a virus, you have a bacterial bunch of stuff growing inside of you, you go and you get what? You get antibiotics. When you have hung out with witches, Satanists, necromancers, magicians, what happens? Their cockroaches jump on you, called little invitational demons. So you need anti-demonics. Now, either you take a couple days of anti-demonics and it gets worse because the demonics come back twice as bad, or you take your full course and you fight it off. If you need a second round, you take a second round. But if you don't take your anti-demonics, it's guaranteed that more cockroaches are going to be invited to the party and it will get worse. Mm-hmm. So these kids were so young and impressionable and so sweet, and they really did not want their sleep disturbed, the nightmares, the touching. It was literally not leaving their property.
Yeah, this an interesting note that wasn't even brought up in the original, and that's probably what some of the people would look for in an interview like this, is that, you know, he was on Lita's team, you know, the woman we were speaking of. Mm-hmm. He was originally on the team.
That's right. And they both quit, and she was mad.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was very
mad. So that didn't help, and that's part of it, too. And then so he ended up oppressed, almost possessed, where he lost consciousness a few times, but didn't get, you know, possession symptoms overall. But he could have been there. But we understand as it goes on, the story goes on, that this contributed to the whole thing by being in proximity to this woman. And working with, I don't think anybody else in the team was in that. It's hard to say on that because we didn't go any further when we found what we needed to do. But there were some things like the table rose up and it dropped. I don't know how high it rose up, maybe about 4 feet and just dropped on the ground. That's pretty abnormal activity. And when we were there, you know, shoving somebody over who's an adult, it takes a pretty good amount of force. It's not throwing them off balance. It's just shoving them over. So this is a more kind of a violent spirit instead of just the shadows, which they had, you know, the shadows at the corner of your eyes. You're standing there and you see a shadow go into the other room. And we spent an extra amount of time on that room. We went in the house to put up some holy water and so forth. And the part of that is what plays into a little bit when she I think she just became kind of, disgruntled a bit because we went over there. We didn't even do the yard yet. We did the house, And she kept doing this thing. She did it about two or three times, right, Fair, where she kept coming over.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the demons are here. And he said, hey, it's fine. I'm sleeping great. Everything's good. No, they're here. She comes in there with her little magic toolkit or whatever. She does it again, and they came back again. He says, it's back. So we went over. We did the yard this time. And he said he saw a face looking at him in the window. And I said, okay, we'll get the yard, too.
Mm-hmm. The seriousness of this case was that this girl was pregnant and baptized. That was deadly serious for her child.
So we're essentially dealing with the client here, Lee. He has one person who initially is coming in and saying, here's what you have going on. I can help, but clearly not helping very much, more so stirring the pot, for lack of a better term. And then you guys coming in saying, okay, yes, you clearly have something going on here, but whatever she's doing is increasing the activity or just mixing it around more and more. Here's what we really need to do. It's almost battle of the, for lack of, I know you're not a ghost hunter, but battle of the ghost hunters, if you're going to put a headline on it.
Exactly.
Of who's going to be able to truly fix this problem and truly help with what's going on. Do you feel like she had any sort of negative intent or just didn't really understand the power of what she was doing?
Well, I give a first impression on this because my wife usually can add on to everything we say. That's what's great about us. We're a 1-2 punch for information as well. And that is, first off, it did seem like, that they wanted the ghost evidence so they can, you know, talk on a stool on a show. And I think people are looking for that.
Sure.
Lee wanted to get the story out. So we agreed to do it. And I contacted somebody to get it done. Since we know a lot of people for many years, it's not that difficult for us to get a hold of somebody from one of those shows. So that's the first place that we contacted was a haunting people, whatever that was. Discovery America, I think, one of the
Destination, yeah.
Discovery Channel.
Yep.
Yeah, channels. And the other thing is that was she... like a rival. I think there was pride in there and she wanted to ghost things, but she originally was the one who called us and contacted us, which is ironic, but I think she probably realized, hey, you know, this, I don't know if she expected it to go as well as it did.
Yeah.
And I do think that people are way into this trophy hunting.
Yeah.
And they do get kind of, there's always teams breaking up because of the rivalry. They start their own and they're getting along very well. But if they really look below the surface where me and my wife work and look with the magnifying glass all the time, they will find that any team that might do any good whatsoever in a case is going to be broken up because that's what the demonics do. We talk about prayer warrior teams that just pray together. And then you didn't tell them, hey, don't say, if you don't tell them to say protection prayer specific to demonic retaliation, you'll find that that prayer team, which in a case in early 2000, there was about 15 of them, and the leader contacted me a month after praying for a case of possession that I was dealing with, and he called me and he told me, he says, we're getting an unusual amount of hardships and misfortunes. Do you think that has something to do with praying for? And then he was asking the question. Mm-hmm. I said, yes. I said, sorry, I thought your team was, experienced. I didn't say it like that. I wanted to feel bad. But his team wasn't experienced. You're just good-hearted people praying for people's problems. Like, my mother needs an operation. My boss, had a heart attack yesterday. And as soon as they pray for spiritual warfare matters, you're going to get payback. And all of these ghost hunters don't realize that. It's not just about protecting yourself on a level, but your whole family can get hit. If you're living in a household with people, your family's going to get hit, too. That's an important thing. And then, Farrah, it's just like, how many times we run into that? The educating part on that needs to be done to protect themselves from this stuff. And I don't think that's why they're around about 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Because eventually they say, I can't take any more of this.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Kenneth and Farrah Deal. To hear the rest of the story and the rest of what happened with Lee and his new wife and the traumatic unfolding events that plagued him for quite some time. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.